Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Pannon. I am deeply grateful to be with you on this 20th day of December 2020. We're going to be looking at how do I's again. I've been looking at a lot of the emails that come to me, trying to figure out how to condense them into a more solidified way of looking at the issues that people have with spiritual practice and some of the things that I talk about. So I thought this would be a good way to do it. Everybody has to understand something, though, here. To work upon yourself, to really have the opportunity to change, you have to change your relationship to your body, to your mind. There has to be something more prevalent, something more essential than just living your life in accordance with how your body and the chemicals flow. There has to be that, what I call that breaking point, where you suddenly realize, for whatever reason in you, in fact, it doesn't even have to be a reason, that you can't go on anymore like this, that you're just a part of the herd. And this herd is leading you to the edge of a cliff and everybody's going to fall off. Now, people do this. They don't think in terms of what is really meaningful. They don't really think in terms of what is going on. There is this old wonderful story about this man who finds himself on a ship, I'm paraphrasing, and he doesn't know how he got on the ship, he doesn't know where the ship is headed, he knows nothing about it, and he sees people playing games on the deck, and he asks them, what are we doing here? And they say, we don't know. How did we get here? We don't know. What are you doing? Deck games. He saw somebody just be swept off the side of the ship into the oblivion of whatever the ocean was at that time. And he says, what happened there? Why does that happen? We don't know, they said. This just happens from time to time. He saw people with illness and maladies on the ship, and he asked them, how did this come to pass? They don't know. This is the way we live our life. We don't know. We're on a ship bound for somewhere that we don't know. We didn't even sign up for it, according to most people's context and the way they think of themselves. So here we are on this ship of life, and then something has to happen within oneself to see that you're on the SS Nowhere. And this nowhere is not like a Zen nowhere. It's like repetitive over and over and over again. All sorts of maladies and problems and wars and rumors of wars and difficulties and lying and cheating and all this stuff that goes on in human mind that looks like it's logical, reasonable, and vengeful. You know, it looks like it should happen, moral. We have all this stuff going on. And very few people ever look at all of this and go, wait a minute. Why am I here? I've got to find out why. And go beyond the mind. Go beyond the herd. Go beyond the herd mentality, the collective unconscious, and start to deal with the meaning of life and how it sustains consciousness and love. So you can't have love without consciousness. And you can't develop consciousness without questioning why we're here, what we're doing here, and when is the madness going to stop for us? So we'll take a look at some of these questions as we go along. And I really think that it's important that you understand why we're here and the whole caboodle of that, okay? I just think that's really important. Let's go to the first question. John from Sacramento, California, he says, I listen to you daily. I wonder if I could ever really meditate. I don't understand. How do I not think, John? John, I never said don't think, and that meditation was not thinking. You must have gotten that from someone else, not me. That's not my premise. That's not the way I work. And that's not my direct experience. So I want you to understand that. Meditation is not about not thinking. Meditation is about sitting within oneself without the need to pay attention to my thoughts. I don't allow my attentions to wander into the lure of those thoughts because, well, they don't lead to anywhere but herd mentality, as I like to call it. You need to take a look at the idea of who is watching and listening to these thoughts. Now, that is more important than anything. If you sit and watch, even if you do nothing more in this whole lifetime, then just sit and watch your thoughts. What are they about? What are they doing? Where are their origins? Where are the origins of my thoughts? Just sit quietly with your eyes closed so you have no distractions and observe. Simply observe. Now, most people are, what do I want to say, lonely without their thoughts. Their thoughts define them. Their thoughts tell them who they are, what they are, what other people think of them. And that's more important than anything in the world to most people. So your ideal of yourself is a derivative of what you think other people are thinking of you. That's it. Once you understand that their opinions don't really matter and they're not important, once you understand the nature of their opinions, which is based on their minds and their assumptions, their bias, their human bias, then you can start to ease back a little bit. What would it be like for you, John, not to be concerned about what other people think of you? What would it be for you not to be concerned about what your thoughts think of you? Now, if you can do that, and most people struggle with it, I'll be very frank, and they enjoy the conflict, they enjoy the hatred, they enjoy the fear, they will very rarely give up this attention thing for the simple fact that they need to be defined through their thoughts. In fact, they need a definition for themselves in totality. And as long as I need a definition of me, a concept of me, as in my case, the Gregory, I'm going to miss the whole activity of my life, the activity that brings me to love. Love is not available to the Gregory. This Gregory that you are hearing his voice has nothing to do with love. What you must live is the echo of compassion and love that does not come from your John, my Gregory. This is easily attainable, but difficult for people to sustain for the simple fact that they're afraid to be alone. That is the big hocus-pocus thing. They're afraid to be alone. Why? Because an ego needs a persona. The ego is persona. The ego is the emperor of all malice that lives as the human heart. And as soon as you give that up, you are going to find a big fight going on, a difficulty going on. You will find that there is difficulty with how you live with yourself. You want a self. You want to live with a parochial mind in a like a child who has a parent, and the parent is the self, And the child is the rebellious one, the one that doesn't know anything, the one that shouldn't have to do this, this, and this in life and have any consequence for their living. This is the way people live on the inside of themselves. So they do not mature. They do not grow. So if you really want an answer to your question, you will have to be passive towards your thoughts. When I was teaching formally, I would say to the congregation, if you were as passive towards your thoughts as you are what I am trying to teach you here, you would be awakened by now. You know what it means to be passive. Things that don't matter to you, things that you don't relate to genetically, things that don't seem to inspire your DNA to survive, things that don't serve your wants and needs. You know how to be passive. You and many others, I am sure, have that capacity on the inside. So if you apply that to the John within you, the persona, you will soon see that there's this little door opening, and there's some light behind that door. And if you persevere to that light, you will never want to go back to the John ever again. You will never want to entice him, talk to him. If you don't talk to your mind, if you don't have conversations with it, if you don't follow its directives, you will be building third person. And it will take practice, but you can do this. And as you start to back off of it, ever so slightly, back off of the idea that the persona can give you something you don't already have, blah, blah. If you can back off of that, then you have something unique. You have something very special. You will start to see that a new mind is born in you. A mind that is no longer fighting. A mind that is no longer hassling. A mind that doesn't need conflict in order to stay in your attentions. You will recognize this, and all of a sudden, you can live off that. And as you live off that, oh, that's when the real experience of life occurs. Something way beyond that that we've known in the past as individuals or people. So there you are, John. You don't have to not think. You have to see your thinking for the way it is, develop third person, understand the futility of thinking, and then move in another direction. If you do that, I guarantee you much will happen. Please forgive me. Namaste. It always amazes me the superstitions around meditation and how people think and how they have to make it difficult and arduous and all of that. And, ooh, spooky, you know, they just... Next one comes from, let's see, Herbert. Herbert, you don't hear that name much, Herbert. How do I want nothing as you speak of? And he talks about all the things he wants and how important they are. You know, a mind that is filled with desire can never, ever come to a place of inner peace. Inner peace is found as a way of realizing, not my will, but thy will be done. That whole realization right there is a mind that I call a faithful mind, a mind of faith. It is only in the mind of a faith that thy will be done kind of mentality can exist. That mentality has nothing to do with desire. Here's what it has to do with, Herbert. It has to do with trusting you will be taken care of. And if you can trust, really trust, that you will be taken care of, thy will be done, and not revert to the idea of what you think you deserve. That's when you really make headway in the course of your life. You really make spiritual headway, that is. You start to see life from the premise of a goodness that indwells you. This goodness is love, and it's there for everyone. In this earthly form, everybody needs to deserve whatever they get. And this is a terrible, terrible assumption. It's a superstition, in my opinion. And it's one that a lot of people enjoy living from because it allows them to stay in the, what I call the family heritage. The family heritage is you have some sort of vague opinion or philosophy about life. Let me give you one. Work real hard and you will deserve to get a reward, a good reward. That's a family opinion. That's a superstition even. I know people that work real hard who have much. They have a lot. They're not happy people, but they have a lot. And they think they're happy, but they're not. And I know a lot of people who work real hard and have nothing, absolutely nothing. And those people, some of them are really happy about their life. They're joyous. And others of them are depressed. So it's a mixed bag with people. There is no quasi-saying. There is no slogan for living. If you're looking for a slogan, let me see. Let love live you. Buddha said, want nothing with all of your heart. Now, that is a very interesting thing to say. Want nothing with all of your heart. Is he talking about the literal nothing? Well, yes and no. Nothing is a quality of consciousness. The best way that Buddha could describe consciousness was with the word nothing, no thing. A mind that is in no thing. Do you get it? It is not thinking a thing. It is a no thing. Now, once that is understood profoundly within a person, a mind that is not relegated, segregated, and even treated with a sense of bias towards the achievement of a thing in this world, is a faithful mind. That's a psychology of faith that goes beyond the demeanor of right and wrong, good and bad, the human intellect. It goes beyond our psychosis, neurosis, our depression, our bipolarism. It goes beyond everything. It goes beyond it all. It's what Buddha called the beyond the beyond. I love that. Beyond the beyond. So when you're looking at what is no thing, how do you achieve it? By not desiring more than what is necessary for you to awaken. Not live, awaken. See, all of the stuff that we want is a distraction. It's just a distraction. And a lot of people get what they want, and it doesn't do them any real good because they're distracted by what they have. And then they have to do the upkeep of what they have, and the ego starts swelling and growing in a person who always gets what they want or has what they want. And then as that starts growing and swelling and getting bigger and bigger, the difficulties of sustaining it as a part of the self or making it a part of who I am and what I am diminishes my ability to love. There will come a time in everyone's life where all of the things they have just will not matter. Just won't matter at all. And the only thing that will matter is the love you've achieved through a psychology, as it were. I'm going to use that word. A state of mind would be better. A state of mind that is faithful. That is an entirely different state of living, too. So, Herbert, you got to work on yourself. You can't do it intellectually. You can't line your thoughts up and think, okay, I got to think this, this, and this, and not think that, that, or over there. All of that, you can't, you just got to drop it all. Futility is still the best teacher for most people in this world. Utter futility. And if I understand that, then I will welcome my own futility and use it as a way to guide me into another experience in this world, an experience that is beyond my thoughts and the fever pitch of my desires. Herbert, thank you for your beautiful question. I hope I helped you, and please forgive me. Namaste. The last question is from Russ, and he lives in Northern California, and he says, I want to do it, but I can't. I need to do it, but I won't. How do I become willing? Russ. Well, if you can't get it through insight, I-N-S-I-G-H-T, then you will probably have to get it through insight. Inciting hatred in you, inciting futility within you, inciting fear within you until you just can't take it anymore. Futility becomes the great teacher here. Sad to say, but true, futility is the great teacher of most people's lives. So in that futility, they do suffer lifetime after lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. Over and over and over. Much futility. And when that futility hits, it hits hard. So it's up to you. How much futility can you have? How much futility do you need? How much? How much difficulty do you need? Most people live their life as a theory that is comprised of their genetic nature, their combination of their genetic nature, their ancestorhood, and that of their DNA, the will to survive. And that's about as far as they go. They don't do anything more than that. So when you start looking at a person's life and the way they live, you start realizing, gee, what is going on in my life? How come things are so difficult? My life is difficult because I do not acknowledge love. I only acknowledge that which serves the emperor of all malice. And because that becomes more important to me, the human heart, and what it desires and what it wants and what it wants to get, I miss the meaning of my life, but more importantly, I miss the significance of my lifetime. You can have all the money in the world, all the pleasures in the world, but if you miss the significance of your lifetime, which 99 9/10 of the people I know do, you will miss much more than maybe that stock that you wanted, or that Ferrari that you wanted, or that house that you wanted, or that person you thought you wanted, or that fame and that fortune, that adoration. You will miss all of that. Because love is something you can't possess. Love, if it is done right, possesses you. And a great love lives within you in each and every moment of your life. Love is the only opportunity of living. I'm out of here. Thank you, Russ, for your beautiful question, and I hope I was able to help you. If you have a question, always feel free to email me, greg@aspire.org. greg@aspire.org. I'm out of here. See you next week. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste.